You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
Suicide. That fun and crazy word. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death and rising alarmingly amongst adolescents in the United States as of now. Charged with guilt and the inevitable question,
like,
why?
You're skimming through this, but go ahead.
Skim something else here.
Ow.
Charged with guilt and the inevitable question, why? Suicide is an irrevocable. It's my speech impediment.
Irrevocable.
Thank you very much. Act that leaves an aftermath of complex emotions and unanswered questions. Provocative and thoroughly researched, the book Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife by Pamela Heath addresses and answers those questions. Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife is one of the most thorough attempts to draw from and describe the post-death afterlife perspective. With that, which I tried to do the best I could with.
Thank you. You did a good job.
Oh, thank you, Doug. That's what really matters. I'd like to welcome Pamela to the show. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
Thank you for having me.
Pam, your website is www.pamelaheath.com. That's PamelaHeath.com. And I assume that's the website like people would go to and they'd be able to get a glimpse of the book and perhaps even order it. But what I'm wondering is, tell us about the book. Why did you write it?
This is a pretty heavy subject.
This is a large book and quite a subject. A subject that... a lot of people do not want to ever have to deal with in their own lives, but it's always been fascinating because it's got roots in religion, personal experiences, and it just is something, and being the 10th leading cause of death is something that's happening.
Yeah.
So it's something that people are thinking about, although it's not, you know, like winning the lotto would be above it.
Yeah.
So why? What? How? What happened? Why did you do this book?
Well, actually, I have a co-author, John Klimo, who is considered the world's greatest expert on channeling.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also the head of my dissertation program when I was getting my doctorate degree in parapsychology. And, you know, you got to spend a lot of hours, you know, getting counseled in their office. And he'd often talk about an experience he had where he was asked to gather together some information about what it's really like for suicides in the afterlife for a woman who was thinking of committing suicide. Because the thought was, if she knew what she was getting into, she wouldn't do it. And I always thought, man, that's a great idea for a book. It really ought to be a book. John should really do this book. And so he didn't want to do it. So basically... I did a lot of the grunt work here and dragged him along with me and we did the book together. And it was surprising how much material there was. I mean, I went through about 400 or 500 different books of channeled material, and about a fourth of them actually had information about suicides, either supposedly from people who had successfully killed themselves, who are now in the afterlife, or spirit guides who were talking about the problem of suicide and what happens to these folks in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did is gathered all the information that was relevant and tried to organize it to make sense of it for people in terms of the kind of messages that they pass back and the kind of experiences that they have in the afterlife.
Well, my favorite example, and I heard this a long time ago from a very well-known psychic, let's say, a very popular psychic, like, you know, world-renowned, huge here in America. And this was right around the time that the famous Kurt Cobain from the band Nirvana committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously that affected so many people. There were so many people that loved Nirvana's music. They loved Kurt Cobain. So people were really curious, like, oh, my God, you know, and there was people asking the questions, like, you know, where's Kurt Cobain now? You know, what's he doing? And then this particular psychic channeled Kurt Cobain and asked him, like, okay, where are you at, right? And one of the what she described was that Kurt is in a place right now of learning, kind of like you could equate it to your average college campus, a very scholarly environment where, you know, some people would call it purgatory or something like that, but it doesn't seem, when you think of the term purgatory, and Doug, help me out here.
I don't think of a college campus.
I don't
think of,
yeah, there you go.
It's not college.
But it was more of, it's an area of learning. You know, he made a mistake. We all, I think, instinctively...
No, there's no judgment. I mean, it's not like there's somebody on high who judges us in the afterlife. We have to judge ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, suicides go through the same general experiences that regular people go through when they die. So you'll be greeted by guides. You'll have to do a life review self-judgment. You may do some spiritual work. If you believe in reincarnation, you may reincarnate and have to deal with things, you know, in another lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with the suicides is a couple things. One is a lot of them have real adjustment problems to the afterlife.
Okay.
They may not be aware that they're dead. They may not be able to see their spirit helpers. Perhaps the best way to explain this is that all of us have, we tend to create our own reality. You know, in life, we do it through rose-colored glasses, or, you know, you tend to see what you expect to see,
mm-hmm.
or notice what you expect is supposed to happen. In the afterlife, it's even more so, because they don't have physical eyes or physical ears. So if they firmly believe they're alive, the only people they're willing to see are people who are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
They may not see those in spirit trying to help them.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a bit of a problem, and why you sometimes get mediums, you know, trying to help these folks move on and realize that they're really dead. The other thing is they have to deal with looking at their own life and the pain and havoc that their means of death caused in loved ones.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Very hard. I mean, if you think about it, it's much harder to forgive ourselves when we hurt somebody we love than it is perhaps for someone else to forgive us.
Uh-huh, exactly. I mean, and we all know that, you know, this idea of suicide, the act of suicide, I know probably all three of us sitting here doing this show right now, including yourself, Pamela, had to experience something like this and had to be through the emotional thing of, like, you know, what could we have done to possibly help this person to keep them from doing something like that? And that's why it is, like you say, like I read a few minutes ago, just the complexity of something like this, the complex emotions involved, it's something you can never really get to the bottom of, in my opinion. It's something with my personal experience, I've never been able to get closure on that or get an idea like, okay, now I can accept this, right? You can't
do that.
Well,
we have messages where they talk about why they killed themselves, you know, and sometimes it's an accident. Sometimes it's getting even. Sometimes it's a bid for attention, you know. But they almost never got what they wanted. I mean, especially those people who thought that there was going to be no afterlife, that they were just convinced that when you're dead, that's it. There's no consciousness. You're done. Those people are really disappointed.
Well, I can imagine, yeah.
Then they have to have a life review and, oh.
Yeah, the one thing you take with you is all your psychological baggage. So if you have, you know, the degree of loneliness that drove you to kill yourself or psychological pain, you still have that.
Yeah, I mean, you haven't...
It's not gone.
You haven't changed any problems. I mean, you may have avoided a problem that you were dealing with in this plane of existence, right? That's where, I mean, I've...
Well, not that much.
Yeah.
You know, most of the suicides that came through, in fact, there's a whole chapter just dedicated to people who are suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
With messages from people who say, okay, we did what you're talking about doing, and let us tell you firsthand, it ain't the answer. You know, it isn't going to get you what you want. And I think that's a really important chapter for people who are suicidal to read, because they can say to me or others, you know, you don't know what pain I'm going through. You can't tell me what I should or shouldn't do. And they're right. I can't tell them what's right for them. But you know what? These people have been there, and they've done that. And they're saying, look, bro, you know, ain't the way to go.
Mm-hmm. And these people we're referring to are
channel.
Okay. All right.
In most cases now, we did try to find a way to sort of confirm the channeled information, because there's no way to know for sure the channeled information if it's accurate or not. There's always a certain amount of potential for bias.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, we talk a lot about it, you know, in the book, how you can get, you know, screwed up messages through a channel. But we also looked at near-death experiences, which is more of a first-hand thing. We also looked at reincarnation research.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at people's dreams. We looked at past life hypnotherapy regression sessions. And they all tended to say pretty much the same thing. The one exception might be the people who have near-death experiences have one significant difference from people who actually die. And at the, there's a moment when the people who actually kill themselves realize what they've done was irrevocable, that they can't go back to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment of understanding, you know, the light bulb going off, really seems to affect them. Now, the people who have just near-death experiences, they come back to their body, so they don't experience that moment. So there is sort of that difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and someone, in most cases, well, how can I say that? But in a lot of cases, I think people who have had near-death experiences, too, were people that really, they weren't trying to die. They didn't want to die. It was just something that was beyond their control.
Well, a percentage of them would have been, and then a percentage of them, no.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We looked at near-death experiences around suicide attempts.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right.
So they concentrated on that.
We were trying to keep with that suicide theme.
All right.
Yeah.
So that and these people, that was different, you said, for near-death experiences.
Yeah, because with near-death experiences, you get to go back to your body. So you don't have that moment of realizing what you did you can't change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't go back to your body. A lot of suicides, successful ones, there's that moment when they suddenly realize that they really succeeded, and they can't go back to their body, and what they've done is done. You know, there's no going back. They are dead. And that seems to be a very powerful moment for them. And a lot of them immediately, when that realization hits them, they regret what they did.
I have like 50,000 questions.
Let
me start with one of them. Did you end up talking to or channeling with any murder suicides, but somebody who actually committed what I think is the ultimate unforgivable act of murder, committed suicide on themselves. And I'm thinking specifically in the news, I guess the kids have been going crazy lately in the past like 5 years and just going to school and shooting everyone up. And to me, that's the unforgivable.
Yeah. Exactly.
We didn't get the Columbine killers. I was kind of hoping we might channel messages on that, but we did spend about the last third of the book is on suicide bombers and suicide murder in general. And that was one case where we actually weren't able to find anything written in the material, in part, I think, because the Muslim religion is very anti the paranormal. It really doesn't like it, doesn't like to talk about it, doesn't like to talk about channeling. Big no-no in their religion. So we actually had to go out and find channels who were willing to try to channel these folks, which was not an easy task. Most people didn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We finally got a few wonderful volunteers who agreed initially to try to channel the spirit guides for suicide bombers.
Mm-hmm.
And then what usually happened is after you talk to the spirit guides for a while, things got more comfortable with everybody and we started getting more direct messages from suicide bombers themselves. Now, they have, again, the same problem as anyone else has, which is when you do the life review and self-judgment, part of what you have to look at is not only your own life, but the lives of anybody you harmed and everybody who their life would have touched if you hadn't killed them. And you have to look through that whole chain of events, how you affected their life. You have to literally walk in their shoes. You have to experience their death and what you did to them.
Oh, my God.
And you have to, And they tell us this can actually take thousands of years.
Oh, man.
To go through it all. Yeah, especially if you've killed a number of people. Yeah, you've got to go through it for everybody. And not just once, sometimes repeatedly.
Okay, and then here's an interesting question then. I mean, we're looking at the flat ground of this. Like, okay, like you said, Doug. People who have committed the ultimate, you know.
Well, yeah, I find it so amazing that you can't talk about ghosts or spirit guides or anything like that in the Muslim religion, but you can strap a bomb to yourself and walk into an open market
and just kill hundreds of people.
You know,
we spend a bunch of time talking about it. You know, actually, if you talk to true Islamic scholars, they'll say there is no justification for suicide, and there's no justification for murder.
Well, and we're talking about
what they are doing is they're playing, these people who are doing this, they're playing word games.
Mm-hmm.
They're refusing to use the word suicide and murder. In fact, they get very upset if a journalist approaches them with those terms.
Well, and like you said a few minutes ago, I mean, some of these people may be biased that you've talked to also. But my question or my concern is, there are situations in life where someone may be put in a situation. I don't care what religion you are, where you come from, what your background is. Someone may be put in a life or death situation where if they want to survive or defend themselves, they may have to take the life of another person. It's not because it was their intention to do that. If they were put in a situation to take the life of someone else in order to protect their family or protect themselves, and this isn't something that they went out to get themselves involved with. They were just put in a situation beyond their control. They take this person's life. Are they subject to the same coincidence? Oh, I don't want to say punishment. The same.
Intent is very important to those in the afterlife.
Okay.
And if your intent is self-defense or protecting others, that's going to be very different from an intent to harm as many people as you can.
Yeah.
Those are taken quite differently. But again, remember that other people aren't judging you in the afterlife. You are judging yourself.
Okay.
Attached to that with these suicide bombers and others who have a very different, perhaps, view of right and wrong than we do, is that the spirit guides oversee that life review. And they do it to give balance, both to make sure that we aren't too hard on ourselves. For example, that person, as you mentioned, who committed murder but did so in order to save others, or even committed suicide in order to save others. Somebody who, harmed others and doesn't want to admit what they did really was not perhaps the most enlightened thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they will make those people keep going through that until they get the point. I mentioned there's a third category of suicide that we looked at, too, which appears to be very distinct from either the suicide bombers or traditional suicides, and that's assisted suicide.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, and that actually hits home.
That's local here for us.
That hits home here. We're in the Detroit metro area.
And that's a totally different ball of wax. Those people have very few regrets. It does not seem to be, for example, if you assist someone to commit suicide, it doesn't seem to be treated by the afterlife as murder, which I thought was a little surprising.
Well, again, it's intent, though, I think. I mean, I think really...
Yeah, you're trying to help them.
I mean, if someone, and I'll be opinionated on this. We've discussed it, I think, before on the show here. If someone's laying somewhere in pain, they can't move their body, they can't function, they have zero quality of life whatsoever.
Right.
I don't see the problem with that.
And there's no prognosis for any. Yeah,
there's no cure. There's no coming back. Just like suicide, there's no coming back, right? I don't see a problem with if the family would give this person their a blessing to say, look, you know, the game's over. I can't do anymore. We've tried everything. We've tried every cure.
Right. Well, you just made a couple key points, though, which the spirit realm also mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that, first of all, you need to discuss it with others.
You
need to make sure your family is okay with this.
Yeah.
You don't just do it out of the blue without telling anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is you need to consider, have you gotten everything out of life that you intended to? Was there a part of your life blueprint where you were supposed to be taken care of for others? Was there a certain amount of spiritual benefit or gain that you might have had from a degree of suffering? We're not talking about forever, but
yeah,
a certain amount of suffering. And, you know, is there a reason for what you're going through? Is there something you can get out of it? And they ask that you weigh all these thoughts very carefully and make a decision with a lot of thought and only after talking to other people. But then they say, you know, whatever you decide, pretty much it's okay.
Well, as far as assisted suicide is concerned?
Yes.
Okay. And that's a very interesting...
But that's very different from taking the life of a healthy body. And I've been contacted by a number of people with healthy bodies who just have psychological pain.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't say just, but who are suffering extreme psychological pain,
mm-hmm.
who want to feel that the same is true for them. And it's not.
Well, no,
there's a real distinction between if you are terminally ill versus if you have either a healthy body or you're simply ill but you're not terminally ill.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously very complex. There's a lot of dynamics going on.
That's like 400 pages.
Dynamics going on. What about folks who, like, a lot of... I don't know, and I could definitely easily be wrong. I've been wrong before, and I'll be wrong again. But one thing that could lead to suicide is true mental imbalance. You just really are not right in the head, and you don't perhaps conceive that, you know, oh, hey, you know, I all these bad things are happening to me, whether real or imagined, I mean, or interpreted, I should say. You know, all these bad things are happening, and I'm not meant to be here. And you convince yourself, because you are not right in the head, you convince yourself that that's the only thing that you can do, and go ahead and do this. Do you carry mental imbalances into the next life? Are you still as confused, or is there some way of clearing that on the other side and showing you, you know, here's what happened. You were really screwed up.
Now that's a great question. And I actually saw two different answers to it. One group says, and by the way, that's actually a major factor in a lot of suicides, is whether it be manic depressive illness or severe depression. But mental illness, mental imbalance, which may have, you know, physical roots, is a very common aspect. Also, there can be a certain amount of that with drug and alcohol intoxication. Now, what we seem to see was that when the body dropped off because you died, people who had just a physical problem, you know, genetic or otherwise, once they lose the body, it's like they lose the problem. And they have clarity again. And they're able to see their guides, and people are able to explain what happened. And it, for the most part, there doesn't seem to be any real negative judgment. They're not looked down upon or anything. It's just sort of like, yeah, this is what you were dealing with. That's just where you are now. But there's another group where you have a mental imbalance that's sort of self-induced. Drugs and alcohol.
Tell you what, Pamela.
Go get it.
I tell you what. That's really. I really am intrigued by this, but I want to take a quick break though. I just want to ponder on this during the break for a second, because there's a lot of questions I have about that.
I want to skip the break, but we do.
You
want
to skip the break?
No, we can skip.
We can skip if you want.
The thing is on our breaks we play independent music, and we have developed a relationship with these bands because I adore. That's one of our pet projects that I absolutely adore, is playing independent music on the break.
You want to take a break then?
We'll have to, yeah.
All right, Pamela, hang tight, because I want to talk about this more after the break. Is that okay with you?
You betcha.
I'm torn between two of my loves. I love talking to you, Pamela, and I love the independent music that we play on the break. So, everybody, give this independent music a chance. Like it, love it, hate it, it doesn't matter. It's independent, and you should be exposed to it. I know I love just the exposure to it. And then we'll be right back with more from Pamela Heath of PamelaHeath.com.
You are listening to Ghostly Talk with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
You know, I'm very, very, very fortunate to be a host of the show.
I'm not, man. You're really getting on my nerves tonight.
I know.
I'm just joking around.
But my thought is that, you know, during the breaks, we play the independent music, and I think it's important to listen to. But during this particular break, I continued speaking with our guest, Pamela Heath.
As we usually do during our breaks.
And we do that. I'm just absolutely, completely, 100% engrossed in this topic. And your book, Pamela, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, is available through Amazon.com, of course, and undoubtedly you talk about it a bit at your website at www.PamelaHeath.com. That's H-E-A-T-H at the end, .com. And we talked about, I think I drilled you with, 5, 10, 20 different questions during the break.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I have no clue exactly where I want to go next, but I do.
We got to pick up where we were. We were talking about
let's do that.
Suicide and alcohol board when they, and that's causing mental clouding. Those people don't seem to have the same advantage of people who just have a physical brain problem leading to mental illness or imbalance. These people, because there's a psychological quality to the addiction or to their confusion,
mm-hmm.
they can often stay very confused in the afterlife and can even have major adjustment problems and try to harm the living because mm-hmm. they still have cravings. Like a lot of addiction that has to do with psychological cravings, not physical cravings. So even though they don't have the body, they still want to get high or they still want to get drunk.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll hang out around the living and try to encourage them to over-imbibe or to use drugs in order to get high vicariously.
Well, I've heard of that in two circumstances.
I think we're on the same thought thing here, Doug.
The two circumstances that I've heard of that very, very fascinating thing was one was Edgar Cayce talked about it in his readings that, you know, dating back to the turn of the century, the turn of the other century. He was doing these readings. He's a healer, a psychic healer.
Right, I know.
And what would happen is he would go into these sleeps and talk about somebody and who was presented to him. You know, they would write to him, and then he would do a reading for them. And one of them was evidently walking the streets of New York, and they said, "What's wrong with this guy? He's acting erratically. He's gone for months at a time, and then he comes back." The very first word out of his mouth when he went into his sleep and did his reading was possession. And what it was, you know, when you read through the whole thing, is that there was a spirit attachment who was living its continued life through him.
Right.
And the guy would go on these huge drinking binges and stuff like that. That's what the spirit wanted to do. And, and that's what would happen, because as soon as the guy would imbibe, you know, take alcohol, boom, that opened up the door for the spirit to come in and then live its
it kind of opens up your protective shield of your aura.
Right.
And it is something a number of other mediums have also spoken about as being a real problem that can happen. And sometimes, actually, you can even have sort of a spirit attachment that's not trying to be harmful but ends up causing harm.
Mm-hmm.
In cases, for example, somebody who's committed suicide, they're depressed, they see you as a light, they try and hang out with you because they're trying to understand what's going on, and they think maybe you're aware of them, and you start to feel their depression, and it starts to get to you to sort of resonate, you know, like two guitar strings where you're tuning the guitar, and you hit one string and the other starts to vibrate. And they're not trying to harm you, but by being around you, they're shifting the energy around you, they can sort of affect you emotionally if you're sensitive to that kind of stuff. I would say the first time I walked down Berkeley streets, I hated that town. There were so many spirits of dead spirits of drug addicts who were looking for somebody to, you know, vicariously get high around.
Well, with alcohol and drugs, I mean, and this, you know, Doug, you did put your finger right on what I was thinking. The vice versa, maybe it does tie in, is I've heard, you know, and that's one of the rules we have in ghost hunting, is that, you know, if you're going to go on an investigation and go to an area that's supposedly haunted, you do not imbibe alcohol, you do not do any drugs.
Oh, yes!
I mean, it's pretty obvious one.
It's one of the fundamentals.
It's a fundamental. I know. It's a given. But one of the reasons that people said, one of the reasons is, you know, aside from being a jerk, you would probably be in that situation, is that you do weaken your protective aura by drinking alcohol or doing drugs. And that makes you open to being invaded by a spirit of that sort.
What really confuses me, though, is that there's people, guests on you know, the absolutely phenomenal show Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah,
there was just one in the past month, I can't remember who it was, said, "Oh, yeah, you got to do all these mind-bending drugs in order to have an out-of-body experience," or something like that. I don't remember exactly.
As soon as I hear that, I just
I got to turn it off and wait for the next segment.
I don't subscribe to that.
I think you should be able to do it without the... you know, the assistant.
Well, it's a very limited path. You can't go very far, and you don't have control over it if you're using drugs or alcohol as a way of trying to find, you know, those higher levels of consciousness. You really do much better with meditation, and it's a slower path, a more difficult path, but it's one that you can control, and it's repeatable. And I have to really, never had trouble sliding around in terms of different states of consciousness, and I've never used drugs in my life.
Good.
Yeah. Well, if you want a way to learn how, one way might be to learn hypnosis, because that's an altered state of consciousness, and you can get you can sort of get a taste, shall we say, of some of the altered states through that if you want.
Interesting.
Well, and before the break also you mentioned, and I don't know if we touched on that really yet, is that when people, and this is from the information that you guys have gathered, a person in an altered state like that, whether they're drunk or they're high or whatever, and then they commit suicide. It's obviously something, a lot of times I think that if somebody commits suicide under that state, under that influence, I think a lot of times a lot of people don't really want to do that. It's the alcohol that makes you think irrationally or the drugs that do the same thing.
Right.
But you said that these people go over, and a lot of times they say, look, your bot, well, okay, maybe.
I think it's a difference between if you're wired improperly, if you're wired wrong, if there's a physiological reason for this, then as soon as you're free of your body, it all becomes clear and your spirit guides
can
help you.
There you go.
But if it's not because you're wired improperly, if it's because of a psychological something psychological within you, and it's not it's not your,
which ties into your soul.
Then
the
you've got a harder road.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now I understand. So
sometimes
it can just be simply physical. It can be a physical problem that you had in this life. Unfortunately, you got a bum body. You got shed the world coil. Shed the world coil. Your problems are okay. All
right. Right.
Now I understand. Sorry. I don't
harm, no foul. You know.
Right.
It's like it's understood. They still don't encourage suicide, but it's like it's considered understandable, you know.
Yeah, by no means I think that we're endorsing it in that situation at all.
Yeah.
It's not the right
because
thing.
Because while you're here, you don't know which one you are. So you just wait it out, and you'll be helped, in natural course
of
time.
Well, they say there's always help for us if we ask for it, you know. And what they recommend is if you can kind of quiet your mind, you know, it doesn't even have to be meditation. It could be prayer. It could just be sitting and thinking. But if you quiet your mind and listen, you know, they say they will try to help us. They'll try to give us messages or guide us in ways that are helpful. And the problem is that we live such busy lives that we sort of tune everything out. We don't let these messages in. We don't realize that all we have to do is ask for help, and they will try to help us.
Well, that and a more real-world thing maybe, too. So you are right. People live just such busy lives now. I think all of us have been through situations where we're like, oh my God, I wish I were dead. Right? People have said that. I wish
but
I
not
were
meaning
dead.
It.
Not always meaning it, but just sitting down and talking with someone and kind of getting it off your chest a little bit and relieving yourself of the burden that you put on your mind with, you know, guilt or paranoia or whatever it may be in the situation. I've been doing that for years. I just sit down and go, okay, look, I need to discuss this with somebody. I need to get this off my chest. Can you just listen to me for a few minutes? That's always helped me out. I can't count how many times that's helped me out. And I mean, I'm not saying that I'm like suicidal by any means, but I think it's something that helped me steer even further away from that direction, right? So talking to people, I think, is a good thing to do, too.
Yeah, I think that the real thing is, though, these people, they don't escape their problems. And I would have to say I do believe in reincarnation, and it looks like one of the problems that you get into is that when you reincarnate, you've got to face all the problems you had in this lifetime made worse.
Oh, God.
Now, granted, they say you have all the help you need to make it through, but it's not going to be easy. It's going to be even harder. And there is a tendency, according to the reincarnation research data, to commit suicide again. So if you've committed suicide in a past life, you're more prone to do it in this one.
Ooh. So it's a matter of, it's a matter of learning.
It's a bit of a carryover, yeah.
Yeah, it's a matter of learning. And, I mean, what better way than to learn something than to make it, than to really pound it on you, I guess. I mean, really hit you with it hard. You know, because something you said a little while ago, too, suffering. Where, you know, you may be able to learn from suffering. I think there is a lot to be learned from this, the idea and the feeling of suffering, whether it's mental or physical. I'm not saying go out and, like, you know, make me hurt, you know, no pain, no gain, stuff like that. But there, you know, in life you have these challenges, you have these things you have to get over, and they're not always easy. They're difficult. They're hard to deal with. But at the end, I know personally, at the end, I've looked back and said, well, now I have a greater understanding of how to handle things in the future when it comes to this kind of stuff, or whatever it may be, whatever the situation is. So that is a really good learning tool, and a lot of people, I know a lot of people want to turn around and run away from whatever challenge it may be, but I think you can learn a lot from that, too, if you just stand and stick it out as best you can.
Sometimes you're just putting one foot in front of the other and to keep going, and it's not easy.
No, it isn't.
And you just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep going and hang in there just a little longer and a little longer, because sooner or later things change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what makes a lot of people hopeless is they feel things will never change. And yet, if there's one thing, you know, you kind of recognize about life after a while, it's that things always change.
They do.
And that was one of the things I said to you. You said, oh, all this stuff is going on, all this stuff is happening. And I said, oh, a year from now, you'll just be laughing at it.
Well, that's something you said to me a couple of years ago.
Yeah, and then a year from then, you called me up and you said, you know what? It's completely different.
Yeah,
you are absolutely right.
It's a perfect example, Pamela, because this was a few years ago.
Yeah.
We had a long, you know, Doug and I, because we're such close coast, you know, co-hosts of this show or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we're buddies outside of this thing. It isn't an act. We hang out and do stuff together. And we were having a long talk, and I was all burned out on something. I'm like, man, everything sucks. This is crap. I can't do this anymore. This is stupid. And he's like, dude, I want you to look at today and then think exactly a year ahead from now. Bookmark this a year from now, and then come back to me and tell me what's going on. And I followed up on that. I really did.
Yes,
I said,
did.
I came
really
back
did.
A year later and said, hey, man, you know what? I bought a house. I did all these insane things, you know, when I thought at this time last year that things were in a hopeless state, you know. So
things change.
Things do change.
Definitely the theme. You know, I can't imagine that anybody is not intrigued already, right? And we have so... We only just talked to you for an hour on the air, Pamela. One thing,
let me just mention, if I can, what people can do to help suicide. Because if you know someone who committed suicide and you want to know how can I help them, there are things you can do. One simple thing is prayer. And I don't care what denomination you are, just that heartfelt good wishes towards them. Another big one, especially for parents who have children who committed suicide, is to let go of them. To not create a shrine where you try to pull them back and you try to pretend they're still alive or you're constantly wishing they were still alive, but to let them go.
That's tough advice, though.
Wish
tough
them well,
advice, yeah.
Yes, it is, but you know what? It holds them back otherwise. They are so aware of your pain and your suffering. If you can't let go of your grief and your anger and anguish, they feel it.
Wow.
And it makes it harder for them. That's part of the burden they bear.
Well,
so I did want to mention that.
That's true.
I'm sorry to...
No, that's a
very good advice.
Extremely important.
Yeah, very important.
And also that they try to contact us, some of them. And this happens to folks. And you've collected some experiences in the book.
Yeah. And so, and they often will come to visit people in dreams. So...
Mm-hmm.
I would tell those people who want to connect with a loved one who's passed on, you don't have to go to a medium for that. A lot of times you can just do it in your dreams and sleep. And just sort of mentally, as you're falling off to sleep, imagine sort of like setting a place for them and inviting them to come visit.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, is a very, I mean, to keep communication like that in a positive way, like just a second ago, Pamela, you did say, you know, people that dwell on the past, that dwell on the things, that yearn to have their child
back. You're accepting their dead, and you're saying, you know, I know you're dead. I hope you're doing well. You know, feel free to come back and visit sometime. You know?
But that's I think that's helpful. It's a healthy way of embracing that person, was a part of your life at one time, and they were a big part of your life.
Yeah, that connection never ends. Just because they're dead, that bond of love is still there.
Mm-hmm. And this, I mean... All right, Doug.
one of the things that I wanted to talk about,
is the
communication with your loved ones who've passed on. In one of the things in the show notes, I'll just be blunt. Says phone calls from the dead, I'll be more blunt too. I've heard two experiences from people that I know and trust where they have gotten. Now, neither were suicides.
No,
but I imagine the inner working
the dynamic
is going to be
the
about
same.
The same,
yeah.
You know. But phone calls from the dead, is this a, I mean, it can't be expected, but is this common? Is this like a thing that happens?
I don't think it's common. It's not common. Scott Rogo,
you just pushed every button I have. Scott Rogo is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I admire what he did during his life. So.
Yeah, he's a great parapsychologist, too.
Yeah.
but anyway, he wrote a whole book on it called literally Phone Calls from the Dead, which I have a copy of. And it does happen. I think most of the time, though, the calls he got from the dead or before people realized that these folks were dead. And they would get a call from someone, and it would be within an hour or so of their death, and they wouldn't have heard about the death yet.
Yeah.
And it was almost like as soon as they realized, no, this person's dead, the connection was dropped. I don't think there were any suicides that he talked about in that book, in part perhaps because suicides seem to have a little slower transitions.
Mm-hmm.
So most people would have realized they were dead by the time they have a chance to try and connect that way. But they do try to connect with us. They do love us and care about us.
Mm-hmm. And there is, you just mentioned something also, too, that suicides have a slower transition than someone. I'm wondering if, why? we've discussed a lot of stuff about it, but I'm wondering if it's
a lot of them are dealing with drug and alcohol or extreme emotions.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are very confused, and they don't realize they are dead.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few exceptions of suicides who realize right away they're dead. They see their body hanging from the tree. They know what's going on. They see their spirit guides. They move on.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's great, so to speak. But even those people spend a lot of time in sort of these healing centers with sleep.
Okay.
The one exception being the suicide bombers don't seem to spend time asleep, but they are kept isolated from others to a large extent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. They don't want these people reinforcing their belief patterns. And a lot of those, you take your personality with you. Not only do you take your psychological baggage, you take your personality. If you're argumentative when you're alive, guess what? You're going to be argumentative with the guides when you're dead.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, and then if you put a group of the same people together, you're going to have a big problem on your hands too.
Exactly. So if you separate them, it's easier for them to look at their issues and to sort of start to sort through their stuff.
Man, this is heavy.
And you did all this in the book. This is amazing. Your book, of course, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. You organized all this, research, and put it in that book for us to get. I'm absolutely impressed.
And John Klimo, whose website is www.jonklimo.com,
mm-hmm.
also did help me with it. He is the world's expert on channeling. And so, you know, he really added a lot of credibility to the book. And also, he's a good writer. And I like some of the touches added to the book.
Well, I have to say, I mean, a subject as heavy as this one, I know when we booked this thing and we decided to do it, I was a little like, oh boy, this is going to be something new for us. On top of that, I thought, you know, well, this is going to be a really, you know, we try to have a good time here. We always try to have a good time here. And you know, it is around, you know, death and things like that. A lot of shows are, but we're talking about research and you know how we, you know, it isn't always about death. It's about life a lot of times too. And I thought honestly that we were going to have this conversation. It was going to be the whole hour was going to be kind of like, well, yeah, you know, and people die and people kill them. And I thought it was going to be kind of like, oh man. But I have to say, Pamela, I need to thank you for being such a great person. I mean, you're such an upbeat person. It blows me away. It wasn't anything like I expected at all.
Well, it's a heavy topic, and it's a thing a lot of people have a knee-jerk reaction to. It's still very much a taboo topic. But if there's one thing that I hope comes through when people actually read the book, it's our compassion for these people.
Yeah.
Because we understand their suffering. We understand this is not good news. They would love to hear that this is an out that they can use when they want it. But it just doesn't work that way.
No, it don't. I think that's something that regardless of all the things we've talked about on the other side of doing this, I think still in this existence, I don't think it's an option for anything. I know, Doug, you agree with me on that, too. It is an option.
Certainly. It's nothing that I would ever accept or condone myself,
mm-hmm.
Or for any of my friends, because I would rather try and work it out here while we're in this side.
Yeah, yeah.
For those those who are thinking about it, or those who are depressed, or those who know people who are depressed, or don't know what's going on with someone you know, pick up the book.
Pick up the book. This might be a good thing to help you out.
It's more research, and obviously with Pam, with your good humor and expressiveness, it's got to be a very interesting read about a really, really heavy topic.
Yes.
So I'm very impressed, Pam.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, thank you for having me.
No problem.
Stay on the line,
for a moment. Yeah, we want to drive you insane for a little bit longer
we
after
just
the show.
Want to answer something really quick afterwards. But I do want to mention again, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife by Pamela Heath. Mm-hmm. The website is, of course, www.pamelaheath.com or johnklimo.com, which I'm sure most of our folks have that already. Already bookmarked.
Paul Nation. We want to thank
Paul Nation. We have to thank Paul Nation for coming on.
And talking about some really interesting stuff on the roping. Very, very cool stuff. We want to thank...
Before that, Kevin Cockbill and Nicole of Paratalk Radio.
And Area Paranormal. They have I guess it's only two of them now. I thought it was 400, but I guess it's only two organizations they belong to now. And also, we want to thank Steve from Taps for dropping in.
Steve Gonzalez started the show.
Yeah.
Can you believe it? From
Taps,
which is his initial first call into Ghostly Talk.
Sorry about that, Steve.
Yeah.
No, it was really great to talk to Steve finally. It's been something we've been meaning to do for a while.
Don't forget that his particular event is this upcoming weekend, December 1st and 2nd in New York.
Spirit Search, December 1st and 2nd, like you said.
If you go to that, and you're a Ghostly Talk listener, not only bug him about Ghostly Talk and coming on again, but also you'll get freebies if you mention us, but also we want to talk to you. We want to know
get a hold of us,
to Ghost Hunt with Steve Gonzalez. So there's no scheduled show next week, but you know what?
We're working on something. The schedule for December has not been posted yet. We were kind of talking about that on break. We're going to work something out.
Watch our website at www.ghostlytalk.com. Thank you, every listener, for tuning in once again on your iPods, on your car radios, and on your computers. We appreciate it. Let us know what you think at www.ghostlytalk.com. Until our next episode, 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. on Sundays Eastern Time, this has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L. We'll see you later.